Having made some inroads in the state house in November, Michigan Democrats are already gearing up to recapture seats in the state Senate. The argument will be that despite billions in tax cuts to the wealthy, Michigan has not yet seen commensurate economic growth or jobs. And while working families are paying more in taxes, incomes have fallen and routes to a better future are being hampered by cash-poor schools and colleges and union-busting legislation. We'll review those claims and talk about what measures the majority party is taking on our behalf with the Upper Peninsula's Republican state senator just ahead on Media Meet. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guest is 38th District State Senator Tom Casperson of Escanaba. With me on the panel, Mining Journal staff writer John Pepin and WLUC TV6 reporter Andrew Lacombe. Thank you for being here. Let's get right to those claims by Democrats. Big tax cuts for the wealthy, taxes up for working families and retirees, relatively high unemployment. How would you describe Republican stewardship over the state since 2010?
Well, when you hear the term the tax cuts for the most wealthy, the corporations, they're not being truthful with you when they say that, because if you look at what we did, the corporations, the large corporations who did get carve-outs under the Michigan business tax, which was done when I was in the House, the tax increases that took place at that time, the large corporations got carve-outs. They weren't paying those increases. It was the small little business person that has a mom-and-pop shop. They're the ones that got clobbered. So what we did is we took away those exemptions for those large corporations, and we leveled the playing field. Did we give businesses a break? We gave the small business person a break. If you're going to call them the wealthy, I think there's a lot of small business people in our communities that would completely disagree with that. So I know it plays well, but it's really not the truth. And if you look at it, an example would be the big three, the automakers. Mm-hmm. They were part of that got a carve out and weren't paying the tax. And Governor Snyder said, that's not right, that's not fair, we're going to level this thing out. Everybody's paying the same thing. So actually, large corporations turned out paying more this time around because of that loophole being closed. So I understand the politics of it, but it's really not the truth.
Okay. It seems Governor Snyder has addressed some of his critics in the newly proposed $50.9 billion budget plan. It would hike gas taxes and vehicle fees for road repair, expand Medicaid to 500,000 more uninsured adults, boost education funding by 2%, and add 107 more state police. Would also raise hunting and fishing license fees. What do you think of the plan, and what sort of reception do you expect it will have in the State House and Senate?
It's lukewarm, to say the least, obviously, because the citizens, quite frankly, are tired. Times haven't been that good, so when you talk about anything that might involve an increase, it's really tough to sell it. You look at the infrastructure,
license fees and stuff. License fees and the gas tax would work out to $120 per vehicle per year. That's quite a bit.
Right. If we go with his plan, there's a lot of plans on the table. They're talking about a referendum that we'd bring to the people with the sales tax increasing that. I think you've got to weigh through all the options at this point, and the governor has presented his plan. You're going to start hearing more coming out of the House, probably out of the Senate, with those type of issues. But again, it's going to be a heavy lift either way. We've been talking about the gas tax or the gas revenue that comes into the state ever since I've been in the legislature. And I have heard nobody in that circle say that we're fully funded or everything's fine. It has been a problem. I was recently briefed on our road commissions and where they're at. It's really a tough situation. So something needs to be done. This is one of those issues we kept kicking down the road, letting nobody, thinking that somebody else will take care of it. This governor doesn't think in terms like that. He thinks long term, and he thinks if the tough decisions need to be made, then it's up to us to do that. But I don't know for sure how that's going to play out. You mentioned the DNR issue as an example with fees there. Same thing. We've heard about that for a long time. The philosophy behind what they're doing right now is they've consolidated a lot of the license fees that are out there right now, different types of license that people buy. They've consolidated them like a small game license rather than buy multiple different types of license. You get one. And there's an increase involved in it. So those are the things that have to be addressed. We'll talk to people about it. I think there's some good and bad in both of the philosophies, but I do believe there's a problem with road funding, and I think it'd be wrong for us to move it down or pass it on to somebody else to take care of.
I think, Andrew, you have something to say about
that.
Yeah,
with just how do you justify just raising taxes, you know, with the gas tax and everything, just based on your philosophies of just keeping taxes low? Like, why is that the way to do it?
Well, if you look at the road revenue that you're talking about, it's a user fee. The people use the roads, we all use the roads, whether you're on public transportation systems or you have your own vehicle and you're driving down the road, we all use them. And we can't escape the reality of bridges down south that have boards under them to catch the cement. And some of the differences that you're going to see coming out is, in our case, up in the Upper Peninsula and northern Lower Michigan, some of the more rural areas, the MDOT infrastructure isn't quite as bad as you might have heard how bad the roads are. We've got pretty good MDOT roads. They're not perfect, but they're not bad. Our problem is more secondary roads. But the road funding is everybody. And at the end of the day, we've got what you call Act 51, Formula 51, where the money goes down through it and just dispersed through the gas tax. So we have to be vigilant. If we do this, who's going to get that money? And I don't think one size fits all. And that's part of the discussion we're going to have between the House, the Senate, and the administration. If the idea is to just prop up mainly MDOT and make sure they have plenty of money for their infrastructure that they're dealing with, and the others get kind of left off to the side, that won't work, and we won't have support for that. But clearly, if you look at our secondary roads, we've got roads that the road commissioner are considering turning to gravel that were once blacktop. I don't think the citizens want that. And so at the end of the day, they don't want to pay more money, but they also don't want the gravel road. So we have got to find a way to resolve that.
The governor says he wants about, I think, $1.2 billion a year for 10 years to do this. You think that'll do the job?
I think it'll go a long way in doing it, absolutely. And I think people would see the results at the end of the day. But again, how we get there is going to be the key, because the problem that we're faced with, the citizens, are, you know, it's not a lot of money at the end of the day, but you start adding it up. We just mentioned the DNR talking about their fee increases. Well, as a whole, it probably is not a whole lot of money. It's enough, but it's not a whole lot. But start adding that with the gas tax increase, and then start adding that to what we're waiting to see what's going to happen with the health care costs and how that's going to affect us and how it has affected some people already with some of the changes we've made. People are contributing more to their health care out of their own pocketbook. When you add it all together, then you start running into problems, and that's where it is difficult. And, you know, ultimately it comes down to, I think, create an environment to try and create and gin up the idea that we need to get job growth going, good paying jobs, and get people back to work, and you'd see some of this go away. But that's the reality of where we're at right now.
One more on this, just on this point here. While the governor is fond of saying he's not passing along credit or blame, he did say in his speech that the federal government is a mess. These are his words, I think. It may not be exact quote. And financial issues in Washington are a threat to Michigan's future. That, to me, could signal a bunch of things. I'm wondering about the Senate's the sense of the Senate on the Medicaid changes.
Yeah, prime example of a concern. We're taking the word of the federal government that they're going to pay us, I believe it's 110% reimbursement on the Medicaid for all the new people that would come onto Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's for 3 to 4 years. And then after that, that compensation drops to 90%.
Right.
So at the end of the day, when you look at what's happened in the past with the federal government making promises, I guess, that, you know, we need to do this for our citizens, ultimately you see the rollback, and all of a sudden the issue starts getting dumped onto the state level, and you have to then take care of it. That's where everybody's concerned about this right now. Does it play out the way the federal government says it's going to play out? And if it doesn't, who gets left with the burden? Because once you offer it and people are on it, it's going to be very difficult to suggest that we can't pay for it. And that those type of costs could crush a state's budget when we've been making inroads and improving our budgets. We're passing them on time. We end up with a small surplus at the end. It's a start. We're heading in the right direction. I think what he's alluding to is we're nervous that federal policies could crush all the good work that has been put in place to get the Michigan moving in the right direction.
Okay. In a similar sort of trickle-down way, the Michigan's concerned about federal mandates, but there's a lot of county and local governments concerned about state mandates and unfunded mandates. And that's been something that's been a perennial concern. Is there anything you see happening on that?
Yeah, I'm actually sponsoring legislation. We're working on the details of trying to identify every single mandate and make sure we don't go do something that the locals would say, well, wait, that's good, leave that alone. We're working with the locals, and we're going to introduce legislation to remove the mandate from the state level. It doesn't mean that the locals can't implement whatever that policy might be, but leave it up to the locals to make the decision whether they have the resources to do it or not. So I can do what I can do on the state level. That's what we're going to do. That was one of the issues that a similar issue was the PILT payments, where the states was buying land and didn't really worry about the total cost of owning that land and what that implication was to our local units of government. It was a fairness issue, and this is similar in the sense that they're dumping mandates down and saying, local units of government, you deal with it, but then, by the way, we don't have any money for you, so figure that out. That's not right.
Yeah, and then PILT is especially important for like the northern part of the state where there's mostly state lands and federal lands.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean,
that was your bill, right?
Yeah.
And the governor signed it already. That's a 50% increase from $2 an acre to $4 an acre. First increase since 1986.
It is.
How do the municipalities feel about it?
Well, I received Legislator of the Year from the Township Association, so I guess they're pleased. But, you know, I didn't need that award. I'm very appreciative of it. But this was something long overdue. This is one of those things where the state just kept marching on and really didn't think about the consequences of their action by buying more and more land, saying how important it is that the state owns land.
Pulling it out of tax.
Right.
You know, potential tax revenues. Yeah.
Sure. They were actually, what they were doing is they had a pool of money for paying their taxes. And as they bought more land, instead of increasing that pool, they stayed with the same amount. They just averaged the new acreage into it and come up with a new rate. And that's what they were paying the locals. So it wasn't just a matter of the 50% increase. We actually got them to pay the $2, which they had promised back in 1986. So we bumped that up. And then we got a 50% increase on top of that because there was no movement from 1986. So what we did is we used inflation and kind of come up with a formula to justify it, and the governor ultimately agreed with us. And the beauty of that was my colleagues that come from downstate where they don't have a lot of state ownership to deal with, they couldn't see the importance of this. They just couldn't understand why we were making an issue out of it. When they actually got the actual bill and realized what the state is liable for to own all this land, they stood at attention, and now I've got my colleagues talking about land ownership and paying attention to it. So for me, it was a double win.
Yeah.
We took care of our locals and gave them what they were owed, and we've got other people now, other legislators that don't deal with this problem paying attention to it because they see the cost to it.
Okay. Education is clearly the most persistently debated topic in the state. We've got, the PILT thing is not incidental to education either. There's a lot of small communities use that money for education, for schools. We've cut considerable funding. The apparent method has been to restore it gradually while providing funding incentives for universities and schools, especially high-end school districts. Is that working, do you think?
I think it is to a certain level, but again, what we've got to be careful of, and this might actually touch the mandate side of things, and that is things that we've imposed on our school system saying, you know, deliver it. One thing that jumps out is the curriculum mandate that we imposed a few years back. Our schools were stuck with having to implement now this curriculum, and so you're hearing a lot of talk about the idea that the trades are important. I completely agree with that, and I think the mandate of the curriculum, the way we did it, is not the right way to go. I think we should have learned from what we did and realized we might have made a mistake here and rethink this, which is what we're doing. But there's an example of we drove costs up for schools by doing that because they have to meet that targeted mandate of curriculum. So they have to focus everything they do around that. There's really very little flexibility for school systems to look at trades or other things. And the concern we've got now is, now that we did that, if we change focus and start going back towards the trades, how do we get there?
Put some vocational education in the K-12.
So those are things we've got to be concerned about. So there is some increases to K-12, but it's at a marginal rate. You're not seeing large increases going back into it, and that's simply trying to keep the state moving in a forward direction, not get too far ahead of ourselves. But that's not to diminish some of the problems that our schools are faced with. They're truly there.
Okay.
Another thing that the governor had in his budget was a supplemental for some dredging and stuff. And there's a lot of focus, it seems, recently on waterways in the state, especially with record low water levels for Lake Huron and Lake Michigan. You're involved with an effort to try to change the ability of the Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund to spend money on other things. Dredging might be one of those things. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, the trust fund, and it's very sensitive. Because those that believe in the trust fund, that it's pure and can't be looked at, really get upset when you start talking about that. I personally have said I think the trust fund is a great thing that was put together, and that it served its purpose. I mean, for a lot of years, it really did. It allowed the state to purchase a lot of land that really fit the public good, the public trust. Mm-hmm. So it worked. But we're now to a point where the state owns 4.6 million acres of land, and yet the trust fund, the way it was structured, demands or makes mandatory that the trust fund buy more land. They have to spend X amount of dollars. I think 75% of the money that comes off the interest has to be spent towards purchases of land. So my perspective, I'm thinking, I suggest we remove that percentage so they could buy 100% of the land if they wanted to, but at the same time, maybe this year, they don't buy any land. Let them have that flexibility, broaden what they can spend the money on, leave it under the control of the trust fund, and make sure that that broad brush that we would use would only be tied to natural resources. Keep it where it was intended. That was natural resources. But I find it amazing that some people don't want to change that percentage. They want to keep it the way it is, which tells me they believe we, the state, should continue to buy land at, in my opinion, an alarming rate and not slowing it down. And yet we've got harbors that you can't get in and out of. We would love to have some walkways, some trail systems, maintenance of our natural resources. We'd love to do it, and I keep hearing we don't have any money. Yeah. I think there's something wrong with that. And that's all I'm proposing is we take a look at it, not ruin what's there, let the authority stay in place, let them make the decisions, but just broaden what they can spend the money on related to natural resources.
But it would take a constitutional amendment to
sure.
do that.
And that was the other argument. Some folks have made suggestions that the legislature wants to raid the fund. Well, not under that criteria. We have to go to the public and get a change to the Constitution, just like they did to put the thing in place. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to be honest with the public about what's been happening with land purchases, where we're at, and what's been going on with the maintenance of our natural resources, where we're lacking funding to do that. And I think the public, if they saw the whole picture, might agree with us that maybe we should be a little more broad in what we spend the money on, as long as we keep it related to natural resources.
Okay. Let me take just a moment here to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about current issues in Michigan with 38th District State Senator Tom Casperson of Escanaba. With me on the panel, Mining Journal staff writer John Pepin and WLUC-TV6 reporter Andrew Lacombe. Andrew, you had a question?
Yeah, along the lines of natural resources, I know Governor Snyder in his budget added more funding to Natural Resources Department, you know, increased registration fees, and then just taking more money from the general fund. Are you comfortable with the increased fees? I think it's the first big increase since 97. And just why is that important for the state's development?
Well, it is in the sense of if we're going to put the money in, again, into the natural resources and enhance our natural resources for the use of our citizens, I think it's a noble cause. My concern has been from the day I was elected is that I felt a trend within our natural resources, the departments, be it DEQ or DNR, to be more of a department that was moving towards an off-limits or a preservation-type department versus a use-type department. So as long as that's where the focus is and we're moving towards that, I think you'll find a lot of support for that, including sportsmen, knowing that the money would be used for the enhancement of you and I to go out and enjoy the great outdoors. But right now, I think we're in the middle of a movement that people aren't quite sure. Are they really there? We've had a change in leadership. Director Cray has been doing, in my opinion, a great job. I work a lot with him chairing the natural resources. He certainly has not been one that's led me to believe that he's trying to block usage and preserve all the land so nobody can use it and enjoy it. I think if they stay on that path, you're going to see support starting to come their way. For the fee increases, and that's been the problem in the past. Those that are paying have found they're not being listened to in their opinion, and the departments went off in different directions on them.
Okay. Another big issue in Michigan and nationally are so-called right-to-work laws. The new Michigan law merely provides that union dues cannot be collected as a condition of employment. Yet opponents have chosen to attack the law in court, not on its substance, but in terms of how it was passed during the lame duck session. There's a lot of resentment there. At some point, observers were locked out for a period of 4 hours, I understand it, and the law states that the Open Meetings Act provides that the laws and acts of a public body, I'm quoting it here, may be invalidated by a court when official meetings, deliberations, or votes are held in a place that was not open and accessible to the public. Do they have a case?
Absolutely not do they have a case. And by the way, just to preface this, I was voting with them on that issue. Mm-hmm. But I also was there and actually offended by the fact that they would say that, because our state police had to take action. There were 7 people that tried to bust through the doors, literally bust through the doors and head out into the Senate floor.
Okay.
What would have happened at that point? I don't know. But our state police, who were there to protect people, had to make a decision. So I find it ironic those that make those claims never tell the public what the actions that took place to cause the lockdown had happened. And
So there was a perceived threat, and that's
there
why
absolutely the lockdown. Okay. Was, and it took place. Now, what the state police did was they locked the facility down while we were in session. They didn't remove anybody other than the 7 that tried to bust through the door, and they've been arrested and they've been charged. They left everybody in there. Everybody that was in the balcony, everybody that was in the building could stay as long as they were civil and doing what they were, you know, doing their civic duty to let us know they disagreed with where the legislature was heading. Okay. They locked it down so more couldn't come in. And what they were trying to avoid was a riot. And at the end of the day, we all should be supportive of that. And so when they, in my opinion, play political games like this, and I find it frustrating because you sense that in me, because I was with them on this issue. I thought it was an overreach with the right to work. I didn't think we needed to do that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time,
so
I have to tell you,
with the governor on that point.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, their actions need to be called into question too. And to simply make it sound like there was a bunch of people there acting like Little Red Riding Hood, and somehow, you know, somebody within the Capitol decided we don't want you in here, we're going to close things down. That is not what happened. There was actually people arrested because of some very bad behavior, let's put it that way, trying to tear down doors and come into the facility and cause problems. So let's tell everybody the whole story, and I'm comfortable that people will judge it based on the whole story, not just a political slant.
Okay. John could probably help me on this one. The governor seems keen on expanding mining in the Upper Peninsula. You drafted legislation, now law, simplifying taxation for mining companies, the Michigan Non-Ferrous Metallic Minerals Extraction Severance Act. That's a big one. It makes mining more attractive in Michigan, but many UP residents still are opposed to the potential for environmental harm. What do you say to them on that?
Well, you got to go back into Governor Granholm's administration when we passed legislation to put the parameters around it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, those groups that would oppose mining were sitting at the table and actually were down in Lansing when Governor Granholm signed that bill. I've got the pictures of all of us standing there.
Okay.
Very familiar names that people have heard about in the media here up in the UP, all supporting and championing the legislation. And Governor Granholm said this would be good for Michigan. We've got the highest standards in the country, if not the world, what we put in place.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there for that. And then shortly after that happened, the minute, in this case, Kennecott, applied to get a permit, those same people started hauling them into court. I thought, again, that was pretty disingenuous to do that. So they haven't even given the law a chance to work with the high standards, and they've done nothing but throw monkey wrenches at this all the way through. And I think the standards are good ones. I think we hold the companies to those standards. And the problem we've got here gets back to all the issues we were just talking about with budgets and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't produce something, if we can't put our people to work, up here, it's a sad day in the UP because there's not much left to give us a chance. And so that's what mining offers us, is some hope. And we've got the resources here. And this is not just, if you remember, I don't know if any of you remember, the argument against Kennecott was they were only going to hire 70 people and it would only last for 6-7 years. And we've already got multiple mining companies that are lining up to go to work. Arvana is ready to go. In fact, my understanding is they've actually found more copper. It's not getting smaller, it's getting bigger. Mm-hmm. The numbers at Kennecott are far exceeding the 70 that we were told. And this is just the beginning, it's not the end. So those were the arguments we heard, and a lot of them have been dispelled. So at the end of the day, it just seems disingenuous to keep the fight rather than join with us. And let's make sure they do it right, but let's be proud of the fact we can put our people to work and keep our families here, and that, you know, my children can come back. There's a decent job waiting for them here. I think that's equally as important, if not more important, than what they claim are the issues.
Well, the severance tax was controversial in the beginning because of how it was first introduced, with locals not having much knowledge of that.
Yep.
But in the end, you were heralded as somebody who helped work things out in the end, and now it seems as though local governments are fully supportive of that, which that tax makes it easier for mining companies that are starting up and such, and also creates this rural development fund that could add more infrastructure projects for the UP.
Right, and the development fund really came out of the first debates about whether we mine or not, because the whole argument was these big companies come in, they take the resource, they make their big profits, and they just leave, and we're left with a hole in the ground. Well, that's not true. We've got reclamation that's required. There's a lot of things that have to play out here, and that the mining company can't just dig a hole and leave. They've got to reclaim. But there is some truth to the fact that the resources are here. They're part of who we are, the Upper Peninsula. And that if the mining companies did come and profit from those ore bodies, maybe there should be something put in place that there's a long-term advantage to the community for that. And that was really the concept behind it, is that we can use that fund to help us build infrastructure up and build some of the things up in our rural communities that, you know, a company couldn't afford to do that. AT&T is not going to build a huge system going up into the Keweenaw. There's just nobody up there, you know, number-wise to use it. So it's not profitable, it's not doable. Maybe with this economic development fund, we can start doing some of those things to get out in front of it and help our smaller communities. And there's a legacy then left behind that you could say, mining did profit and benefit the Upper Peninsula as a whole. And that's really the goal behind it.
Okay. We've got less than a minute here. President Obama's push to take action against gun violence after the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut seems to have gotten a tepid response generally. Yet there is considerable agreement on criminal background checks that now apply to only about 60% of gun sales. Where do you stand on the gun control thing overall?
Yeah, the background checks I have no problem with, except for the fact that there's no way to find out if you have a mental illness with that background check. And yet, I think it's pretty safe to say when you see some of these tragedies, somebody mentally is disturbed. There's something
Actually,
wrong.
Nationally, only 4% of people who are mentally ill are involved in gun violence, but they're big
Well, the ones that we see that cause this conversation are there. So it seems like we should be focusing on those things, and I'm just convinced that it's the people behind the guns. It's not the gun. And we can take the guns away from the good people and the law-abiding citizens, but the criminals are going to get them.
Okay. I'm afraid we have to call for time there. We've been talking about current issues in Michigan with 38th District State Senator Tom Casperson of Escanaba. With me on the panel, Mining Journal staff writer John Pepin and WLUC TV6 reporter Andrew Lacombe. Thank you all for being here. I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.